Hello, and thank you for tuning in to another episode of CPA Review and More. We are pleased to bring you the number one podcast for CPAs and CPA candidates. If you'd like to learn more about how Yeager CPA Review can help you, find us on our website at YeagerCPAReview.com. Now, here's your host, Phil Yeager.
Hello, everyone. This is Phil Yeager, and welcome to my podcast called CPA Review and More. And we have today as our guest, coming to you from Hilton Head, South Carolina, Chris, how do you pronounce your second name?
Hervishon.
Hervishon. What is that? Where's that derived from? Hervishon.
France, actually.
Well, you didn't sound French to me, Chris. I mean,
I can't help that.
Sound like a New Yorker in a way, like me. All right, Chris Hervishon. And Chris has a business. He's self-employed, correct?
That is correct.
And Chris holds a CPA from the state of South Carolina?
Correct. And also in Pennsylvania as well.
You also hold a CVA. Is that a certified valuation?
That's right. That's exactly right.
Do you value businesses? Do you do that?
On occasion. It's not a core part of our business, but we do a little bit of that.
So if I wanted you to value my CPA review school, all right, could you do that?
I'd be happy to.
Okay. All right. I'll give you a little hint. It's worth between $100 and $200.
There you go.
I'll let it go for $150.
Be a bargain at twice the price.
Yeah, that's right. I'll give a discount. Okay, but no, seriously, I enjoy still being in this business, helping people. And also, it says here you're a practice advisor. Who do you advise on the practices?
I think that's referring to the 40 under 40 from CPA
Practice. Yeah, tell us what that means, a practice advisor, 40 under 40.
Sure. So CPA Practice Advisor is a publication in the CPA profession that a lot of CPAs read. And this year, 2019, I was honored to be selected as one of the 40 under 40. So 40 CPAs under 40 years old, which is me still at the moment. But a great group of folks. We got to hang out for a little while in Indianapolis back in October. Just learning from a lot of really good people. It was a great experience.
What'd you learn from the think tank?
You know, I find that when I go to conferences and go hang out with other CPAs and especially young CPAs, the most value always comes out of the conversations that you have, not necessarily the content that's being provided in a vacuum, right? That said, we did have some great content. What stuck out was the presentation by Ed Kless, who's, I guess, one of the fathers of value pricing, value-based billing. And
I really, what is that value? What is that area? I've never heard of him, but what is that?
Yeah, so, traditionally CPA firms bill by the hour, right? That's kind of the old model.
Right.
And, you know, if you work on a client and you're billing, $100 an hour, and you work for 5 hours and you make $500. If you work for 6 hours, it's $600. And so really the benefit is to the CPA to take a little bit longer, maybe. It's not necessarily the benefit that the client's going to see. Value-based billing basically says you're going to bill for the value that you deliver to the client, regardless of how long it takes you, regardless of how automated your systems are. It's going to be based on value that you drive for the client. And so Ron Baker and Ed Kless, Ron Baker wrote that book, Implementing Value-Based Pricing, which is a great read, by the way. I don't get anything for saying that, but it's a great read. And Ed Kless wrote a chapter in that book, and they do a podcast together, The Soul of Enterprise, which is a great podcast also. Highly recommend that as well. But he gave a presentation on value-based pricing, and we had some discussion around value-based pricing. It was really kind of, just really enlightening.
I had a practice in Colorado and Maryland, and I used to charge per hour. And the longer I did the practice, it was tax, I had a tax practice. The longer I did tax returns, I did them faster. So the fees were going down. So
for sure.
I heard about this as a value added. I called it value. I thought to myself, the reason it's becoming cheaper for them is because I'm charging on an hourly basis, where really, when I go to my dentist, all right, and he gives me a bill for $250 and he's been with me for 5 minutes, he's not charging me on an hourly basis. He charged me based on his experience, all right? What he's got to add to my mouth, which means, well, he takes away pain, but I hope he doesn't add pain. But no, that's exactly what I did later on. But it took me a long time to look at it that way. And how that started, the hourly thing, was that I thought it was a great idea. I would say about the fourth or fifth year into practice, someone came in with their organizer. I did a tax return, all right? Remember the organizers? I don't know if they still have those. But
still got them.
Still got them, all right? And I did the return right in front of the client. I just wanted to get out of the way, all right? It took me 10 minutes to do. So I charged him $400 or something. And he says, wait a minute. You spend 10 minutes and I have to pay you $400? So my first thought was, don't do the work in front of your client, okay? All right, because they're not going to understand, hey, you know, you're paying for my experience, my good looks. Well, you wouldn't get much for that for me. But, you're paying for my experience all the years. That's why I can do it so fast. You're paying for my software, all right? All these things. So from that point on, everything I did was based on what I thought it was worth, you know, also what the market would bear. Is that what he says also in the thing?
To some extent, sure, yeah.
Yeah, so that's, if you're ever going to run a practice, don't run it on a per hour basis because it doesn't pay. You'll be losing money, all right? You won't be making as much money, let's put it that way. And I'm not saying you have to be greedy, but you have to sit down, you know, just like a doctor or dentist and say, hey, this is my experience, all right? I can do things faster maybe, all right? So what is my time worth? But, you know, in the accounting profession, unlike lawyers, if you go to a lawyer, don't you find they all charge about the same hourly rate, the type of lawyer you deal with?
For the most part, yeah.
And, you know, so they must talk to each other about what they charge in the area. I don't think accountants do that, do they? I mean, I've never had an accountant come up to me and say, by the way, what are you charging an hour? All right? It's sort of like it's kept secret. And so it's really hard to say what your hourly rate would be that's fair. All right? Because a lot of people, they want the work, they'll just discount their rate per hour. So forget about what those other accountants are charging. All right? You charge what you think you're worth. That's not excessive, but fair, all right? And charge for your experience. And I assume that's the way you charge, right, Chris?
Absolutely. And part of the reason why we do that is, you know, I personally think that it's becoming even more dangerous to bill by the hour for, you know, one of the reasons that you touched on there was it takes less time the longer you do it, number one, so the more experience that you get. But also number two, we've got all of these things that are driving automation and efficiency in the accounting profession now, that's only going to get exacerbated. You know, bots are becoming much more prevalent. They're much more accessible, even to people who don't know how to code. And that's one of the things that we do is we implement automation in our business and also in providing financials for clients. And so over time, we are going to get more automated. We're going to get much more efficient. And if we were to bill by the hour, you know, we'd have to just keep onboarding client after client after client who are all basically not profitable. So it doesn't make any sense. And, you know, for younger CPAs who are, you know, just passing the exam or getting certified, it's something to think about as you go through your career and as you think about maybe going out on your own, and as you kind of see this automation get implemented, that, you know, billing by the hour, it's not going to work. It's certainly not going to work. Yeah.
Now, when you were at that meeting and you got the award, you said you were talking to young CPAs?
Yep. Everybody's under 40.
And what were you telling them?
There was some conversation that we had around bots, you know, for one, I just touched on that, which is always interesting. I like to hear what other folks are doing. We had one educator who was there who was, he was an interesting guy. He's got a really big YouTube channel. Just finding out what he's doing around YouTube and around marketing and marketing himself, because it's basically a side business for him. You know, he teaches during the day and then he provides content on YouTube at night, or not at night, but on the side. So that's really interesting. There was a couple blockchain experts there, and blockchain is kind of the new buzzword. And
right,
I love to ask 9,000 questions of anybody that I can about blockchain. just to try to understand it and understand where we're going with that. And then just, you know, kind of around operations, you know, how do you treat staff? How do you think about hiring? What services are you offering? How are you thinking about offering those services? You know, all that stuff that kind of goes along with, you know, managing a practice and managing your career and just getting better at it.
What did you find with the young CPAs? Did they know a lot about the bots, the artificial intelligence? Did they know anything about blockchain?
The folks who I talked to about blockchain, yeah, they know a good bit about blockchain.
They were just out of college? They were CPAs?
No, these are for the most part, we're talking, you know, early mid 30s as far as the attendees.
Right. So they have experience.
So they have experience. From the folks who are younger than that, and I see it in interviewing for staff positions, and I see it when I'm, you know, at conferences and things like that. I don't know that they're necessarily coming out of school with a lot of experience or knowledge about how to build bots or how to implement bots or to think about going and buying technology that has bots, you know, built in effectively. I think that's one of those things that really is kind of learned from experience at this point.
Where are they going to get the experience from? They don't get it in college, you're saying. Where are they going to get the experience from?
So if you were to ask me, I would say, you know, there's a bunch of education that's out there that you can go and access, but you've got to be entrepreneurial about it. You've got to be curious about it. That's the way that I learned. You know, I learned from YouTube videos and chat forums and building my own bots, which basically started from writing elaborate Excel macros. That's how I got started, and then figuring out.
You build your own bots?
Yeah, absolutely. I have for 10 years.
How'd you learn how to do that?
A lot of Googling, a lot of trial and error, a lot of watching YouTube videos and taking classes online that are free or very inexpensive. The point really is you have to start from a place of realizing what's possible. So if you realize, you know, I use this example all the time. If you realize that Excel, a macro, can turn cell A1 bold, you know, just bold text, and it could also make you a cup of coffee, an Excel macro, then everything in between there, that's fair game. You can do whatever you want. You know, it's just figuring out how to do it. And if you realize that that is the realm of possibilities, and if you know that you want to complete a specific task and you want to do it in an automated way, well, then you just start writing code and Googling how to write that code until you get it right. Because, you know, the thing about Excel is you have an answer that you're expecting, and if you don't get that answer, then your bot's wrong. Now, where we are now, you know, that was 10 years ago, and, you know, up until probably, you know, 2-3 years ago. But where we are now, there's tons of software out there that's freely available on the cloud where you can pay a subscription fee or in some cases do it for free, where you can build your own bots and connect different types of apps and connect different data sources in a way that doesn't require any code. You know, if you've got a basic understanding of Excel and how logical functions work, and if you can think logically, you know, which most CPAs can, or all CPAs can, then you can build a bot. You know, but the first step is realizing what's possible and, you know, being creative about what you want to do.
Did you take, now, I know you've been out of school a while, not, you know, you're still young, but you've been out of school, what, 10 years or something?
13, graduated in 06.
Did you have a lot of IT courses at that point, 13 years?
That's it.
Were there IT courses being taught as much as they're taught today?
That's an interesting question. I came out of college with no practical experience in accounting software. And what I'm finding is a lot of young accountants are the same way. But I didn't, like, we didn't learn QuickBooks, we didn't learn SAP, nothing. We learned a little bit of Excel, and I learned Excel in an economics class, not in an Excel class. So there's that. Now, what's interesting is my roommate for 4 years of college was a computer science major, and he was one of those folks who thinks outside the box and likes to automate things, and he's been that way forever. And so to some extent, I learned from him, but I also took some, to be specific, I took one coding class. We learned how to code in Java, which was an interesting experience. That was before I was even an accounting major. That was my freshman year. I took one database class. and that was pretty much it. What kind of sparked my interest in being able to automate things and build bots and things of that nature. Number one, my first accounting job out of college, I was a forensic accountant, and somebody mentioned macros in the office one day. And so I figured, hey, this, it would be really cool if this thing that I have to do all of the time, I could just turn it into a macro and it would do this thing in Excel and it'd be fine. So that was, that kind of piqued my interest. I went from there, I went and worked at a big bank and was responsible for putting together the financials for, you know, one of our lines of business, or actually a couple of our lines of business. The way that those were built were in Excel based on fairly complex macros that touched Excel on Access that were downloads from SAP. Mm-hmm. So I basically said to my boss one day, like, look, hey, if these things ever broke and if I had to do something, you know, to enhance them or fix something, I wouldn't know where to start. So basically at that point, I just started digging into, you know, getting better at Excel. And once you do that, you learn how to code a little bit in VBA, which is basically just macros. And once you realize what's possible, then you kind of go from there. So
it's kind of been my MO. You have a graduate degree in accounting, correct?
I have a degree in accounting.
Now, if you go back 13 years and you just told me a whole lot of stuff that you know now, all right? How much did you know 13 years ago?
Relatively speaking, it would be almost zero.
So really today, you know, you have to dig yourself and learn a lot yourself, all right? Because a lot of schools, first of all, they don't teach a lot of this stuff, all right? And the people I talk to, because I always say, how'd you learn about blockchain? And they'll say, well, I do a lot of reading. I just am interested in it. And the same thing with artificial intelligence. Now, some people tell me they take some computer science courses, but you don't need to have a computer science degree. Now, you graduate. Now, what happened if they're Elon? Where'd you go?
Let's see. Well, I was a golfer at Elon briefly, and then I turned pro. So I was a golf pro for about 5 minutes.
Pro golfer?
Yes. But not a very good one.
How many years?
About two.
Okay. How'd you do?
About two.
How'd you do? No, well,
I'm a CPA now. So that's kind of how that went.
maybe you still do it. Maybe you're waiting for the senior circuit when you...
Maybe. I have to get out from behind the desk, and you know, in another 15 years, maybe that'll work out. But no, so that would have been. Let's see. I decided to take the CPA exam in 07. You know, and at that point, we didn't really have access to you know, online college the way that we do now. And the local university with my work schedule, it just wasn't going to work. So I went to the University of Phoenix, did that MBA program, which was kind of interesting because it's totally online, or, you know, and it was at that point. So it was a different experience kind of working with people from all over the place, which is kind of how we work now. Right. So, and it was a good experience from that regard, but, basically just went to go get my course credits and sit for the exam. And that was right at the period of time where they were starting to require 150 hours to get certified. So.
If you were going today, would you go to University of Phoenix today if you were going for a master's?
To be honest, I would not.
Now, what I don't mean, this is not to insult you. Please don't take it that way. But you know, University of Phoenix has sort of a mixed reputation.
Correct.
And in fact, I have a friend of mine who's a recruiter here in Northern Virginia. And he once told me that a lot of corporations... That's a few years back, okay? Wouldn't even hire a University of Phoenix graduate, okay? Because it was really a degree mill. That's what he told me. Now, I don't know what the situation is now with University of Phoenix. I know they're very expensive. They're not cheap. And they're still there. And they're still advertised. Correct. You know, I don't know. Do you know, what is the position? Maybe you can't answer this, but what is the position of companies now when they see you went to University of Phoenix and you're a recent graduate of University of Phoenix? How do they view University of Phoenix?
Let's see. I had two jobs after I graduated from there. So two successful interview processes and probably, you know, maybe a handful of other interviews. I was never once asked about it. really, in any sort of meaningful way, because I had the CPA after my name. I feel like once you have the CPA after your name, everything else is pretty much irrelevant.
Yeah, and the University of Phoenix is accredited by, I think they're out there, is that Western, the Western, you know, a lot of the, you know, the regional accreditations, North Central,
right.
I don't know if they're Western Association or, but, you know, it's interesting. Back, I would say 10 years ago, all right, people would say, oh, those online schools, they're a joke, all right? But if you look at the schools today, you know, the supposedly the brick and mortar schools, you know, they're online. They're all online, all right? I don't hear them knocking maybe University of Phoenix as much as they might have. But, you know, I'm not familiar. I pass by their buildings because we have friends in Phoenix. But they have a lot of buildings in Phoenix. But, you know, I don't know really that much about it. I've never taken a course there. I don't know really anybody who's taken courses there. But,
sure.
You know, hey, you're saying, would you recommend someone to do that now? Or would you tell them to go to another online?
Right now, I mean, I would probably go to another online. So my purpose was to get the CPA. My purpose was not because I wanted an MBA really from anywhere, but my purpose was to get the CPA. And in order to get at that particular time, you know, there wasn't really widespread access to online,
correct,
you know, education. So at that point, you know, University of Phoenix was a good option because it fit my work schedule and it would allow me to get that 150 hours and, you know, get my CPA certification. So, you know, now my advice is if you got to go back to school and if you're going to get a degree, because for the most part, I think a lot of folks, you know, you need to get enough credits where it almost makes sense to go get the couple extra and get the degree and get that piece of paper. If you're going to do that, go somewhere that has a name that's going to at least give you a leg up when you go to get a job or when you go to get your next job, because it just makes sense. The access to online education is so widespread, and you have to have those credit hours to get the CPA, that at this point you might as well go, you know, wherever you want to go that's going to fit the what you want to learn. Because even now, you know, there's a lot of programs out there that I would say kind of augment the CPA knowledge base or the accounting knowledge base that you can go and take. You know, it wasn't always that way. You know, yeah, I mean, it just makes sense at this point with just the access that everybody has to online education to get something that's going to give you a leg up as opposed to just something that's going to get you over the hump of having those hours.
Good advice. Appreciate that advice. Now,
Absolutely.
Let's talk about you as an accountant. You are a virtual CFO, I'm sorry, all right, for marketing and creative agencies, all right? Now, tell us exactly what you do in simple English, all right? What is a virtual CFO, okay? All right, and you provide marketing and creative agencies. Who do you provide that for?
Okay, so virtual CFO, sometimes that's called outsourced CFO, sometimes it's called fractional CFO, same thing. We generally, in our marketing, we lump that under outsourced accounting. So outsourced accounting covers everything from bookkeeping to the virtual CFO. Bookkeeping being your data entry stuff, virtual CFO being, you know, how to advise a business, you know, more future forward things, forecasting, cash flow management, you know, that sort of stuff. We have a niche in marketing and creative agencies. Marketing and creative agencies, for the most part, tend to be between 1 and 15 people. The vast majority of agencies kind of fit in that.
Let's go back here. Who are you marketing? What are you marketing for? Who are you marketing for?
So our marketing, our internal marketing is generally driven toward marketing and creative agencies. So marketing agencies, people who provide marketing services to other businesses.
Now, what businesses do you provide marketing services for? Or do you teach them how to do marketing?
So we do not do the marketing. We do the accounting and the financial processes for people who do marketing.
Oh, okay. So you're dealing with marketing agencies or
Correct.
Firms that do marketing, CPA firms that do marketing? Marketing agencies?
Marketing agencies, correct. That's our target niche.
Okay. And these marketing agencies, they market specific products or services? Is there anything, there's a specialization in there that you can provide? No?
No, it really runs the gamut. So we've got, you know, kind of in that realm, we've got PR agencies who just do PR for, you know, various types of businesses. We've got digital agencies, so people who run Facebook ads or social media ads for different businesses, inbound marketers who, you know, produce content and who are focused on web design. It really kind of runs the gamut. The common thread is that they're all service-based businesses. They're all, you know, smaller businesses, so somewhere between 1 and 15 people. And they're all, you know, creative types, digital natives who kind of fit well into our processes and how we want to operate. So that's kind of the common thread between all of them.
So you're giving them financial advice how to run their companies, correct?
Correct. And then also doing the accounting and the taxes and all that good stuff.
How many people, do you have any idea how many people do what you do? I mean, is it very competitive?
In that particular niche, I haven't really found too many, maybe five firms, plus or minus, who I've been able to find.
Yeah, how did you determine you wanted to do it for marketing agencies? Why did you pick that niche to do the...
Great question. So I love marketing just inherently, going all the way back to high school, competing in some business competitions and marketing. I was, you know, kind of good at it, I think. I always had a great time doing it. When I went full time in my practice, learning how to market the practice, learning how to bring in revenue, I just happened to learn a lot about marketing just as a function of that. And at that point, I already had one agency client who I'd been working with for a few years as a contractor for another CPA firm, but that's another story. So, you know, I had experience in that realm. I had knowledge about that realm just out of necessity for my own firm. I brought in a second marketing agency client and really liked working with them, realized that, you know, the way that they operate service-based businesses is similar to the way, you know, I operate, and it's really complementary to the way that I want to work and the services I want to offer and how I want to offer them. So from that point, it's just, you know, it's kind of getting like hit with a sledgehammer over the head, you know, just realizing that this is a good fit. I need to find a niche because I feel like that's the way that, you know, the services that we provide are going. And that's the way that you should be successful, is to pick a niche and stick to it and really kind of dig in and provide deeper value. So it just kind of hit me like a ton of bricks. And ever since then, I've been focused on that. You know, we've got clients in other industries as well, for sure. But, you know, our marketing is really targeted toward that particular niche.
So you have clients in other areas other than marketing?
Correct.
But marketing agencies are what you're really going after. And you're providing, correct, you're really a consultant, are you not? Advisory services?
Yeah, exactly.
And the other thing is, I remember seeing ads years ago. So used to say, well, you know, you're a smaller company and you need a CFO. We can get you a CFO and we can send them to your company to work there as a CFO. Now today with the way technology is, I assume that you do not go to that company and sit there or send someone out there. You do it all online. Is that correct?
Correct. Correct. With the exception of some local clients where we will meet with them, you know, face to face, but the vast majority of everything we do is online. The vast majority of the way that we meet is the way that we're meeting right now, via Zoom. We do our financial review meetings via Zoom for a lot of reasons, but yeah, that's the way that we operate. We're totally distributed. So my staff is on the other side of town. He works part-time remotely, and then I've got a full-time staff down in Georgia, and she works remotely from home as well. And you know, so far, so good. It works pretty well.
Are these independent contractors or employees?
One employee, one contractor.
All right. And then how many people actually are in wherever you are now? You're in Hilton Head. All right. How many people work in that office?
I work from home, so it's just one.
Is that your home? I'm sorry to hear that. Is that indeed, your home?
Indeed it is.
Shutters,
yeah.
I think, no, I'm just kidding. Well, wait a minute. Is that you're in a home office? Is that what you're running it?
That's right.
Now, you see clients there? Do clients come in to see you?
Nope, not a one.
See, I used to run a home office, and people would say, you know, if you don't have a regular office, people are going to not take you seriously. But now it's different. You can run a home office because usually they don't come to your office anymore. Everything is done like Zoom, the internet, and the services you provide are the accounting services for your clients, and that's where you get involved setting up bots, right? To Correct. Actually speed up the services that you provide them.
Correct.
Do you use bots for the tax returns you do for them?
As far as actually prepping the return, not anything that's outside of the tax software.
Which tax software do you use?
So we actually, as of 2 days ago, implemented CCH Access. Last year we used Drake. So we're migrating from Drake to CCH Access, which is a cloud-based tax prep software. And the reason why we do that, or why I did it this year, is because I now have staff who are remote. And we found out over the course of the fall, you know, during that busy season, that trying to share tax return files back and forth was getting a little bit cumbersome. So now it's in a place where we can look at it in real time, where we're looking at the same thing. And it makes a lot of sense. And I think that we've got some automation capability that we might be thinking about implementing here in the next year or two. So it should make us more efficient over the long run too.
If I was a person who just passed the CPA exam and I want to set up my own practice, okay? All right? And we touched upon this a little, but what advice would you tell them if they say they want to have their own practice? They don't have much experience working with clients, all right? What would you advise them? All right? Let's assume they have a CPA. They got the CPA, but they really have no experience working with clients and they want to set up a practice, all right? Doesn't have to be necessarily going after marketing companies, but all right, what would you advise them?
I think the biggest piece of advice is to just do it. If you think that, you know, you want to run your own practice, if you think that you want to work for yourself, if you think that you want to go build something, then just go do it and figure it out. It's not going to be perfect when you start. There are going to be bumps along the way. But I've found it to be very rewarding. And to be honest with you, I don't think that I would be employable at this point, you know, if I tried to go back into the workforce. That's just kind of where I am. I enjoy it too much, just being on my own. But the first thing is, if you think that you want to do it, then go do it. If you're going to put it off for years and years and years because you're waiting for the perfect time or the perfect situation or something like that, it's just not going to happen, generally.
If you're just going to keep putting it off, you probably should be an employee.
100%. If you're not willing to rip the Band-Aid off, then you should probably be an employee somewhere.
And also, there's risk with reward, right?
100%.
You felt you were always an entrepreneur. That's what you were going to do, and you were willing to take the risk?
Absolutely. I threatened to go out on my own. I mean, I started this as a side hustle 9 years ago. And so I kind of sort of threatened to go out on my own for like 7 years. And my poor wife, you know, she listened to it for 7 years and, you know, we're still married. But I was at Engage.
Well, congratulations with that. The divorce rate is up to 60 or 70%.
Yeah. Yeah. I got lucky. I was at the AICPA Engage conference in 2018 and I talked to some other firm owners who were my age who had gone and done it. And they gave me some inspiration. And I texted her from Engage and said, hey, when I get home, I'm quitting my job. And I did that, you know, the next day. And went out on my own 6 weeks later.
Was your wife working at that time?
Yep, and she still works. So
But you had that income, right?
Yeah, and I had a small client base, and we had a steady income with her paycheck. So it's not like we had zero,
right?
You know, but the reality was we have three small kids. We had three small kids then. That comes with a certain responsibility and a certain expense, and things like that. And we've been. At that point, you know, we had been relatively successful in our careers and we had built a nice lifestyle. And so, you know, there's a lot of risk when you go out on your own and you're kind of starting from nothing. And, you know, I remember waking up the first day after I was totally done with my job thinking, all right, well, I work for me now. Where's my next bit of revenue going to come from? And just kind of figuring out how to do that and how to bring in clients and how to interact with clients and, how the engagement and the onboarding process go. And I'm a year and a half in and it's not perfect and it probably will never be perfect. Just, you know, we're always chasing something better, a better process, a better way of doing things. But if you think that you need to start from perfect, then you're just never going to get started. You know, at some point you got to take the leap and just figure it out as you go.
So you are looking for clients, right, all the time?
Sure.
And what percentage of your time is spent in looking for clients? So you're the marketer for your company, all right?
Right.
You do that 100%? What percentage do you do?
No, at some point I want it to be 100%. You know, I want to be the kind of the rainmaker, so to speak, and the one who's building out our processes and our automation and things like that. I'm not there yet. I'm still doing some client work. I would say my client work is probably 20% of my time, and then everything else is 80%. And it's not just, it's a lot of networking, yes, but it's also producing content and being active on social media and, you know, producing assets that can be used as content and things like that. So that's the vast majority of where my time goes.
People who are coming out of school today or a few years ago, you know, they didn't believe that, you know, we no longer call people anymore. You know that, right? That was,
sure.
That's the way they think. But, you know, what happens if they think, hey, I don't like to pick up the phone. I don't want to call anybody. I don't want to speak to anybody. I'll just keep emailing them. I'll do a mass mailing to people telling them, hey, this is what I do. If you're interested, get in touch with me. Okay? All right? You can't do that approach if you want to try to get clients. Is that correct?
To some extent.
How do you try, without giving away trade secrets, how do you go out and see clients? You do networking?
A large part of my business was built through BNI. So Business Networking International, we meet every single week. It's a referral group for those who don't know. Meet every week for an hour and a half. You got to get up there and give your 60-second presentation on what you do and how you do it and the, you know, the types of referrals that you're looking for. And then every 6 months or so, I get up and give a longer 10-minute presentation. And
how many,
you know,
people
we meet,
are in that group? Wait a minute, how many people are in that group?
In my group, we're at 24, but we've got several different groups around where I live. And so I visit those chapters on occasion.
And those are people who you can call for expert advice if you need it?
No, those are people. So in BNI, there is one seat per profession. So in my chapter, there is one CPA and there is one roofer and there is one gutter guy and there is, you know, one financial advisor. So, you know, the idea behind BNI is that you develop these relationships and then over time, you start to refer work to people that you are associating with that need help from this other professional that you know. Okay. So, bottom line is BNI is all about building the know, like, and trust factor. So do people know you? Do people like you? And do people trust you that you can do a good job? And all of marketing falls into that realm. So when you ask about, well, you know, can you just send, you know, email newsletters and tell people what you do? And then, you know, there's going to be a flood of work coming in your way. No, probably, because you probably haven't built up the know factor. You probably haven't built up the like factor. People don't know or like you, but maybe they're reading your content. And they trust you and they think that you're competent based on what you're sending them. So that's fine. But everything that you do has to build up the know, like, and trust factor. So marketing or the email newsletters, they're a tool. Yes, they're not the end all be all. I mean, candidly, when I first got started, I figured, hey, I will go out on my own. I'm going to run a ton of Facebook ads. And then before you know it, I'm going to have so much work. I won't know what to do with it. And we're all going to get rich. It's going to be great. It's going to be the best thing ever. That's not how it works. You have to build that know, like, and trust factor. You can do that in person. You can do it online. It takes longer online. You have to be more mindful about it online. It's easier to build trust and likability in person, face to face. Yes, it can be done online, but it just takes longer.
I think entrepreneurship is great. You know, and you got to take a risk. If you don't want to take a risk, go work for the federal state government. You know, that's secure.
That's right.
In many respects. All right. But go into something. Do something that interests you. And by the way, you might even have to study things and learn them because, like bots, all right? You don't find schools that are readily available having courses talking about bots, all right?
Nope.
And, you know, I was wondering, when I first heard that, I said, what's a bot? You know, is it a bottle? I mean, what are we doing here? So when I first learned that, well, I'm not an authority on bots, but it was intimidating to me because I've been out of school so long. Where people like you who haven't been out of school, you know, this technology is no big deal. And I think it's great what you do. Chris, I want to thank you so much for doing this podcast. I hope you enjoyed doing it.
I did. Thank you so much for having me. I really, really had a great time.
And I wish you, I don't need to wish you the best of luck, but I will anyway. You know, you don't need luck. You know what you need to do. And thank you for sharing the things that you have done.
I appreciate that. Thanks, Phil. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
Anyway, I want to thank everyone for listening to CPA Review and More. Remember, if you need to reach me at any time, I always tell you, you can reach me. All right. Even if you're a student in another course or whatever, if there's any advice I can give you, remember my office is, and people tell me I'm crazy for doing this. All right. But my office number in Maryland is 301-874-4900, extension 5. If you just want to chat about the CPA exam or chat about anything, all right, just give me a call. So anyway, this is the end of this session of CPA Review More. Please listen. Remember, we're on every Tuesday with a new episode. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to Yeager's CPA Review and More. As a token for our appreciation for your listenership, we'd like to offer you 10% off your next purchase with Yeager's CPA Review. Save between $50 to $150 with code PODCAST10. If you'd like more information, look us up on YeagerCPAReview.com. And as always, if you've enjoyed this show, please rate and review on iTunes or your preferred listening platform. Again, thank you so much for listening, and we look forward to you tuning in next time.